coming up.
Pit bulls in particular are not nanny dogs. Yeah. They were there for a reason, and that was to protect the homestead initially, way back when, against raging bulls and bears. Mm. And that was their role. We've changed that in society today. Mm. And we believe that the lie that these are nanny dogs, that they're there to look after our children. Well, how many children have been hospitalized within South Africa on its own?
Do you have the stats? Can you share some of those insights with us?
I don't have all the stats at the moment, but there are two cases in the last 2 weeks. There's a little boy fighting for his life. He's been in hospital in Cape Town for 2 weeks.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. Six South African male medical doctors on a mission to change the way in which we perceive healthcare. My name is Dr. Sale Essa, and join with me here in the studio are two lovely guests. One is returning once again. It's our resident plastic surgery registrar, Dr. Bodi Chakraborty. Let's give him a round of applause.
Thanks for having me again, guys.
And as part of our Survivor series, we have a lovely guest to my left, Gwen Folks, who's going to be telling us a story of her survival and a tragic incident that happened to her not too long ago. Gwen, thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here and giving us your time. And sorry for making you wait.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, Gwen, tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into it. Where are you from? What's your background?
I'm a mum. I'm a wife. I have three kids that are crazy big. And I was an administration assistant before my incident happened.
Okay. So where do you come from?
I'm from Alberton.
Okay.
So down the road.
In the south, yeah?
In the south.
Okay, born and bred, always.
Born and bred, always been in the south. Okay. Always been in Alberton, yes.
All right, lovely. So let's delve straight into it. Tell us what actually transpired. How did it happen? If you're comfortable sharing.
Absolutely. So 2020 happened a month early for me. The 19th of February 2020. I was getting ready to go to work. I heard a noise outside and I went out to investigate. I heard someone calling for help and I went out to investigate. Got to the gate or just before the gate, and it was actually my lady that was coming to work for me for the day that was being attacked by a dog. And the dog was had her pinned up against the gate. Between the two of us, we opened the gate. I had the remote and she had her remote. Clicked the remote, the gate opened halfway. And I went to go and fetch the hose pipe. Because that's what they say to do when a dog attacks or when dogs are fighting, to dissolve it with water. Went and put the hose pipe on her, on the dog, and he let go of her. By that stage, she had fallen into my yard, and I was standing next to the half-open gate. The dog let go of her, ran out a few steps into the street. The pavement is quite short, and then turned around and went for me. I fell onto the grass inside my garden. The adrenaline had kicked in, and when I realized what was going on, the dog had already degloved my forearm off of my my bone. The owner came into the garden. She picked up the hose pipe, try to get the dog off of me, hit the dog with a hose pipe, try to get him off of me. He then let go of my forearm and then came in for a second attack further up on my arm, totally mutilating most the top of my arm. The security came, and I was rushed off to hospital.
And how did they manage to grab hold of that dog?
When the various security companies came in, the dog obviously got a fright and let go of me, and he ran out into the garden. But he kept trying to get back at me. They eventually had to shoot him in. He was running around wild, fell into the pool, and that's where they managed to pin him down to shoot him. Wow. And it took 3 shots to put him down.
Sure. And this was the security company that?
The security, by that stage, various security companies from the area had come in. The police had arrived because the neighbors had obviously also pushed panic buttons and called for assistance.
So I just have a few questions. Firstly, wow, that's a very, very traumatic story. Secondly, I just wanted to ask, what happened to the lady that works? Did she suffer any serious injuries as well?
The blessing for both of us was that she got to deal with, unfortunately and sadly, she got to deal with the first bite from the dog, the bad saliva. And she dealt with a lot of the infections. As a result, her operation to her arm was damaged. The operation to repair her arm was delayed until after COVID, and it went into the mess that was COVID and medical situations. She is still alive. She is still dealing with arm injuries. We are still trying to sort out the legalities of what that would cost, what that costs, and how the how we are being funded or repaid financially as a result of our injuries.
And tell me this, the dog's owner, was it somebody known to you, not known?
It was a lady who stayed down the road. The dog was known as a particularly vicious dog within the community. People knew about it.
And was it just a pit? Was it supposed to be a guard dog? What was the, do you know any of that information?
It was, I can only assume, a pet. Pet and guard dog.
Okay. So how did the owner then respond after the incident occurred?
Okay. There's a whole story between who actually owns the dog. The owner of the house took responsibility for the dog. She has been through the court system. She was fined and given a 1-year suspended sentence, which has since then lapsed. I mean, time's up on that. So she's basically got away with owning a vicious dog that caused deathly harm.
So Buryanda to ask, so say a dog bites you, what are the main things you're looking at in terms of like infection or damage, like in terms of someone bites you on the arm?
Yeah. So like with any trauma, you have to follow like the ATLS principles, which are the American Trauma Life Support Guidelines, because it's a penetrating injury. So I think the infective stuff comes afterwards. The main thing is it's essentially like being stabbed. So a small, as we saw earlier, a small, even a small bite, is, if it penetrates skin, can cause, it has sequelae or repercussions. So even a small bite can, like our previous guest, can end up as a quad amputee from the septic repercussions. But then you have to follow, first of all, trauma principles. So if you come in bleeding, you have to stop the bleeding. But it's a dirty wound. Yeah. So the main thing is to, first of all, stop the bleeding. You put the life first, obviously life over limb. And then after that, in our setting, you would then take it straight to theater, wash it out to debride, to basically cut off whatever is dead. And then you have to follow it up quite closely. So if you're bitten today, then you have to look at that wound consistently until you're happy that it's a clean wound. And then only do you start thinking about, okay, I've got a puncture wound, do I close it? Because you just leave it open initially, let it granulate, let it heal, and then you take it forward from there. Yeah.
So also rabies would be also a concern. So how would you manage like rabies?
So rabies, so that's the thing, is if you have an owned animal, so that's why we always ask, was it a pet? Because then you assume it's had all its vaccinations, which you then need proof of. Because then if it's a wild animal or a dog where you can't prove that it has any vaccination, first of all, to my knowledge, the dog has to be put down and you have to examine the saliva of that dog. So you have to actually take it to the SPCSA. They're supposed to then check if it has rabies or not. And then you have certain protocols for rabies vaccines. So initially you would get the rabies vaccine when you came in, and then at 3, 7, and 14, and 21 days afterwards. If it's an especially contaminated wound, you also then intraoperatively inject the rabies vaccine in the wound itself. So that's what would be the rabies protocol. So you normally do follow it when you don't know, but if it is a vaccinated dog, you don't necessarily have to follow those steps.
In most cases, we don't know. Like, people will be walking across the road, get bitten by a dog, and we just give rabies vaccine all the time.
Better be safe.
Better safe than sorry.
It's just an injection that you have to get. Like I said, intraoperatively, you can also inject it into the wound, but rather be safe, because, I mean, rabies is deadly if you do actually get it. I've never seen a case of rabies. Someone actually getting rabies, and I think it's because we follow that strict protocol. But also, I think most animals are actually vaccinated at this point. I can't say as a blanket statement, but I think, having not seen it, but that's obviously quite anecdotal.
I think I've seen one case of rabies when I was working in pediatrics, where a child was bitten by a dog. And then subsequently, like a week or two later, I think they didn't finish the rabies vaccine, you know, on the child thereafter. And so, but that was also an unknown dog. And then subsequently the child developed rabies and then succumbed to his injuries.
But that was the only case. That rabies protocol is not a nice course of injections. It is rough.
Walk us through that. Just tell us about your experience with it and what was difficult about it.
Obviously, while you're in hospital, you're on a course of injections on all sorts of things. And but that rabies injection, when the time came, my first round of rabies was under anesthetic into the arm, into the residual, what was left. And then subsequently, it was a jab in my stomach. And it was a good while later before you actually feel normal, because that radiating pain is sore.
It just shows you how we don't think about it. Like, from a doctor's point of view, we just say we prescribe rabies vaccine, and then it's really good for us to hear, because now going forward, it's something I can tell my patients, because I've never once counseled a patient on saying, it's also going to be, like, you know, injections are sore, but I've never thought that
it
burns. It burns. You know that multivitamin injection you get for free?
Yes, B12.
That is mild.
Oh, in comparison.
Yeah.
Sure. Wow.
it takes you a few minutes laying still to recover from it.
Shame. Mm.
And so you did the 4 injections?
Yeah, the whole 4, 21 days.
Mm. And then there's also rabies IgG, the immunoglobulin. Did you also get?
That's what you get with the vaccine, I think. I'm subject to correction.
Yeah, it's all just one.
Okay.
I think it's all just one.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So this incident occurs. Tell us exactly like what went through your mind when the incident was happening and what you remember of being taken to the hospital. Mainly like I think focus on the emotions behind it.
The emotions behind it. When I realized that my arm had been degloved, I realized that my life is going to be hard.
Immediately
in that moment. Mm. I knew there was a calmness that came over me, and it was, your arm is gone, but it's going to be okay. So that could be, depending on where you stand spiritually, a higher voice speaking into my life. And but then when he came in for the second attack, I really thought I was going to die. I was fully awake and aware when he came in for the second attack onto the upper arm. Once the various people came in to assist me, apparently I had blacked out about 6 times before they got me into the ambulance. And the ambulance trip is quite another trip. the medicines and stuff that you get while in the ambulance trip. And that was a constant. At one stage, I remember feeling, I don't even want to do this. And spiritually, I was fighting the paramedics who were trying to keep me alive. And I don't know if they were talking to me or my mind rationaled that I do actually have something to fight for. I have a husband and 3 kids that need me. And then extended family as well. And that got me through. Eventually I relaxed within the ambulance trip. It's not even a 20-minute drive from my house to what was the hospital in Alberton then. When I came into the hospital, the presiding doctor, professor at the time, told me what his name was, that I was in hospital and that I was safe. At that stage, I realized him speaking to me that I was safe and everything was going to be okay. It took the whole of the day to try and either stabilize me, keep me alive, try to save my arm, or make the decision to amputate. They brought me out. They had me in a coma. They brought me out, and I remember saying, whatever needs to be done. My husband was with me, and he had to give further consent. I just said to the doctor, whatever needs to be done, do it. And I woke up. I can honestly say it took me about a week before I realized that I was alive.
Sure.
So, yeah.
And how many procedures was it? You came in. And when did they make the call in terms of amputating?
So apparently there was a procedure to try and save the arm, reconstruct it as best as possible within the emergency theatre. But then my arm was by then far gone. And it was within that day, and it was one procedure and done. There were a couple of debridements over the time.
Sure.
I think I was in hospital for just over 3 weeks. Mm. And then I went to rehab, and I was in rehab for 2 weeks. And then discharged to COVID.
Okay. And then you said it came in for, I hope you don't mind me asking, and I don't want to trigger anything, but you said it came in for first bites and then a second bite higher up. So yes. Did it puncture like the main artery supplying your arm? Is that the reason? Or
yes. So my arm was totally mangled. Mm. I have bite marks where it punctured the artery under my left arm. Yeah. I've got bite marks on my thigh and on my back as well as on my arm as well. Yeah. So when I realized, when I came to, the adrenaline rush, and when I came to, I'd already been fighting quite a bit. Mm. When I realized that my arm had been degloved.
So the initial attack, you said that the pit bull actually degloved your entire forearm.
Yeah.
Didn't crush the bone or anything else, just remove the skin completely.
There were like 3 appendages off of my arm.
Sure.
So it had totally ripped the flesh off of my bone. Mm.
Sure. And tell me, when you arrived at the hospital, I'm sure they gave you pain meds. You were put into an induced coma, as you explained. And eventually your husband had to make the decision when they said, look, we need to amputate the arm. What was the explanation that they give? Was it because of a lack of blood supply? Was it because of the broken bones? Was it because they just couldn't salvage anything? Were they concerned about sepsis, you know, tracking upwards?
There was very little to actually salvage. Mm. So because the forearm was still kind of attached, but by a very thin piece of skin up in my arm, there was very little that they could actually do to keep the nerves alive.
Sure.
And then when they did do the amputation, there was actually very little skin that they could create a flap with.
Yeah.
So that was open for a good 5-6 weeks before that actually even closed.
So did they? So once it was still open, did they let it granulate and then just do a skin graft, or did they do a delayed closure? How did you end up with the stump?
So what they did was they attempted to close, and they put one of those suction machines on. Mm. Yeah. And had that compress the arm and the what was left of the flap.
Okay. So that's negative pressure wound therapy. So essentially you're putting on a vacuum. Did it have the function where it washed it out as well, or was it just the suction one?
Just the suction vacuum, the little black.
So you get ones that also do the washout.
So it's a newer modality, so it also intermittently washes and then drains out. So it helps with like the bacterial load. But the main thing is what the suction is doing essentially is it's, first of all, it's like it's macro strain. So it's bringing the edges of the wound closer through pressure. And then it's also micro strain. So it's little deformations that it's causing. It's like promotes blood supply. So it's like one of the main things in plastics that we use as an adjunct to wound therapy. So, and you'd say it worked well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, and then did they use did they do a skin graft to close or?
No, I was lucky. I didn't have to go through any further.
Okay, so it just granulated by itself.
Just granulated by itself. Yeah.
Okay, good.
And can you walk us through the rehab process after that? Because
rehab was quite interesting and quite difficult. I'd made up my mind that going into rehab, that I'm going to do what I need to do to get out of hospital. Mm-hmm. So very much a mindset, I'm doing what I have to do. Mm-hmm. I was down in the gyms every day on time and even off times as much as I could, working with either an occupational therapist, the physiotherapist, or whoever was available to assist me.
And then what hand was your dominant hand?
I was right-hand dominant.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that process, you had to now relearn how to do everything, all your daily activities with your
left hand. With one hand and with my left hand.
Mm.
Okay. Right brain, left hand.
Mm. Yeah. So, I see you don't have a prosthesis. Was that ever an option for you?
The prosthesis was all dependent on how the case all works out, which has been ongoing for 5 years, and looking to go on for another 5 years. So that was the other that was the one thing. And the other thing is I've only got 9 centimeters of bone. Mm. So that's a very small piece to actually work with.
Yeah.
And prosthetics, you know, a leg prosthetic is wonderful because so many people need them.
Yeah.
So much more. An arm prosthesis, it's going to take me longer to get the prosthesis to work, to pick up, to function, to pick up the glass than what it is for me to bend forward, pick up the glass and do what I need to do.
Yeah.
The other thing is the bone graft surgery, the recovery from that is very, especially upper limb, is very slight.
Yeah.
I think they give you like a 20% chance or a quarter of a, you know, one quarter is that it's going to go right.
Yeah.
A quarter is that there's going to be further sepsis or that your body is going to reject it. There's going to be a infection setting in. So it's, a roll of the dice.
Yeah, it's a tedious procedure.
It's a tedious procedure.
So they offered a bone graft, like a vascularized bone graft, to give you more of a more length. Yes. Is that what I understand? Okay. And the thing is, it's like you need an elbow joint. So I think below elbow, a prosthesis makes more sense. But above, it's quite difficult.
It's quite difficult. It's
almost more cosmetic, actually. And then I was going to ask, did you have any phantom pain?
I live with phantom pain due to the nerve damage because the nerve was basically unraveled right into my shoulder.
Yeah.
The nerve damage,
And how did you cope with that?
2 weeks ago, just 5 years after the incident, I had a PTSD incident where I was hospitalized.
Mm.
So you deal with it as the day comes. Mm. I am on medication for it.
Yeah.
And PTSD is another dog.
Yeah.
Mm. In terms of the phantom pain, do you feel it like consistently? Does it come and go? Do you sometimes like almost feel as if you still have an arm?
So at the moment, my arm is sitting in a position like this, where my hand is crunched up. Mm-hmm. I feel that permanently. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Depending on the weather, depending on my mood, depending on my health at the time, the phantom pain can be anything from pinpricks to dagger stabbings to fire to water. It can be anything.
Okay. All right. Now let's move on to life thereafter in closing our conversation. So you've been through rehab, you've had surgeries. I'm assuming there's no more surgeries.
No more surgeries.
Tell me about life thereafter. I believe that you no longer are able to do the previous work that you were doing.
Yeah. So.
And how has life changed just overall?
Financially, physically, everything is totally different. I've had to concentrate on just, so if I think of trying to do a project, initially my brain would use both sides to actually carry out the project. And then I'd have to backthink it and work out how am I going to get this article from off the floor into the drum of the washing machine. So everything has had to be rethought through. Financially, it's obviously a strain on us as a family. Things are very different. Psychologically, yeah, 5 years after the incident, you have a PTSD episode and you're in hospital for the only thing that I can really say is that it was just the anniversary of the date that pushed me over the edge. Usually I'm able to take the day off and work through the emotions, but everyone has a hard day and you deal with it as and per the day that you're working through.
Definitely.
And were you ever an animal person? Did you own pets?
We had made a conscious decision that as a family, the kids were in aftercare. We didn't have time to actually look after the pet in the way that it needed, with the care that it needed. Yeah. And we had previously had a cat, and he was just king of the castle and did what cats do. But a dog needs so much more attention. And it was just not, for us as a family, it was not something that time was not available to that.
I see. And tell me now, are you doing any advocacy work regarding your attack or anything else? Is there any organizations that we should look out for?
I do advocate, unfortunately, against vicious dogs, because we live in South Africa and people need to have security, but a dog is not there for security. Pit bulls in particular are not nanny dogs. They were there for a reason, and that was to protect the homestead initially, way back when, against raging bulls and bears. And that was their role. We've changed that in society today. And we believe that the lie that these are nanny dogs, that they're there to look after our children. Well, how many children have been hospitalized within South Africa on its own?
Do you have the stats? Can you share some of those insights with us?
I don't have all the stats at the moment, but there are two cases in the last 2 weeks. There's a little boy fighting for his life. He's been in hospital in Cape Town for 2 weeks, and they're still fighting for his life. His ribs were damaged. His lungs had collapsed, and they're fighting for his life at the moment, still in hospital, somewhere in Cape Town. I'm not going to say where. And then there was another family in the last 2 weeks. Sorry, I've been out of all kind of media exposure. There was another family in KwaZulu-Natal that were attacked by their own dogs. So, yes, it's about how you treat the dogs, but a dog knows who its owner is.
Yeah. I'd say majority of the dog bites I deal with are from the family dog. And it's, the kid was just playing with the dog. And it's often, the most that I see are pit bulls and boer bulls. And I can't attest to the home circumstances and how they were raised. I think that's a completely different conversation. But it's almost always the family dog. And it was just as they were feeding the dog or someone was playing, something quickly just triggered the dog. And then now you're dealing with a dog.
What kind of injuries have you seen?
Everything from top to bottom. It just depends on where. And I've seen it mostly in children. We obviously do see it with in adults, but the most that I've seen are with little children. And it's like you said, if it bites you in your chest, then it punctures your lung and then you've got a pneumothorax. Now you're dealing with that. I think you're lucky when it's just a cosmetic thing and it's like, okay, I'm trying to do debridement and a closure, but sometimes it can be devastating, as we can see.
Very often it's a first-time bite and you're dealing with that dirty saliva that you were talking about.
Well, look, in closing, Quinn, is there any message that you have for our guests? Anything that you want to share?
Or a message for the pit bull owners.
Yeah, message for pit bull owners or for those that might be advocating for, you know, breeding of pit bulls or still keeping them for security purposes.
Train your dog. Train yourself. If you are not 100% sure of your dog, do something about it. There are people that are available and will come in and help you deal with the dog. And they'll give you good advice on going forward with the dog. But if you, for the slightest thing, slightest moment, think that something can go wrong, deal with it and deal with it decisively. I don't want a person's pet or a person's animal is their pet. It's part of their family. It's part of your own psyche. So I don't want to take your pet away from you. I don't.
So you're not advocating?
I'm not advocating for people a to huge put big down. Call. I'm not advocating for a call. I'm advocating for responsible ownership, responsible care, take care of the animal. Stop breeding. You say that your dog is the best, is top of the line breeding, but what's behind the scenes? And it's a money-making racket. And it's a status. I can control the dangerous animal until that dangerous animal attacks you.
And with those words, I thank you again, Gwen, for joining us, for sharing your story. I think it's one of inspiration and hope. Thank you for continuing to fight and advocate for responsible dog ownership. I think it's very important to hear these stories as part of the Survivor series. We'd like to hear more about people with incidents where they've also encountered certain things and overcome them, and that's why we're doing the Survivor series. So
thank you very much for that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing with us the fact that you have so much hope and that you're still gonna fight and keep going, and I hope that you get the justice that you deserve.
Thank you.
Is there anything further that you guys want to
thank you so much for your time, and I just hope you get your justice, as Sal said. Thank you.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
Today we have a very interesting guest. Her name is Leanda Rieda, and she's from the Pit Bull Federation of South Africa. She's here to tell us a little bit more about these animals that are seen as vicious in the public eye, how to maintain them, how to be a responsible dog owner, and everything related to safety with dogs. Let's give her a big round.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
I did get the pronunciation right.
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Thank you. Because I was trying, and I was calling you Linda, and so I'm glad
I got it right.
And one take, one take. So, Leanda, thank you so much for joining us. Normally I ask people about their background, but I thought an interesting question would be to start with. What was your first pet?
I had a dog when I was still in my mom's house, in my parents' house. But it was a Dachshund. They told them now. So I grew up with...
What's a Dachshund?
A little Wolfshund. Everybody knows them as Wolfshunde.
Okay.
Yeah. In the township, Dachshund. People call them
Gogo.
Sausage dogs.
Sausage dogs. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you say Wolfshunde?
Yes, in Afrikaans it's called a Wors.
Oh, so like Wors. Okay. Okay. Sausage dogs. Cool. So
little
you had
ankle
that.
Ankle biters. That's actually what they are. Very aggressive.
But small. Okay. And that was your first pet?
That was my first pet, yes.
So you've always been around
Yes, I grew up with animals. Dogs in the house.
Just dogs? Any other pets? Well, you have lover of like animals in general?
We are very keen on having... I grew up with birds in the house as well. I had a cockatiel and then later on parrots. So yes, birds... we all tried fish at some point and hamsters, but the dogs and the birds stuck. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, interesting stuff. And And then how did you, when did you fall in love with pit bulls?
Okay, so that is quite a story. I had the same perception than most of the public out there. I hated pit bulls. I was afraid of them. They were vicious dogs. They were not the family pet that you were looking for.
Of course.
Okay. Then I had a neighbor that moved in. They had four dogs. And the dogs, when he was not at home, attacked one another. And I witnessed that. And I said, never in my life do I ever want a dog like this.
Hmm.
All right?
Cause all four of them pit bulls.
All four of them pit bulls. Hmm. All right? And it's not something you want to see.
No.
It is really, it's almost as bad for dogs attacking one another than a dog attacking a human.
Mm.
So it was actually supposed to be a very big deterrent for me to not have a pit bull. So I was steadfast, I don't want a pit bull. And then a couple of months later, the same neighbor had a visitor with a dog. And when I saw that dog in the street, because they got outside, he got out of his car with the dog in front of the gate. And I saw the dog, and it was this amazing animal built to perfection. It was the epitome of an athlete in the canine world.
Mm.
And I said to my husband at the time, if I ever get a pit bull, it must look like that.
Mm.
And lo and behold, 6 months later, one thing led to another, and my husband got home with a six-week-old puppy, a pit bull puppy.
Mm.
And I said to him, really? Do you want to bring that dog into this home? And he said, yes, the dog is here. And I said to myself, okay, it's the most adorable thing, a pit bull puppy. So, and I fell in love.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started doing research. I started asking around. I heard about the Pitbull Federation of South Africa. I got in contact with them. I heard they do shows and they do sports with the dogs, like hanging and long hang, high jump, and weight pulling. But they have confirmation shows. And we actually got involved. And I realized, I started doing research on the breed, and I started realizing that The biggest perception of the public out there about the pit bull is wrong, because the media portrays it, all the negative sides, and it's a misinterpretation of the breed itself, because the actual pit bull terrier, American pit bull terrier, is the most loving animal that you can get if it's raised correctly, in the right circumstances, the correct breeding took place. And you know what you're working with, because you need to understand where the breed comes from.
Yeah.
That is very important, because there is animal aggression that comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a canine warrior, if I can put it that way, because it was bred more than 100 years ago for dog-on-dog combat. So there is animal aggression in the breed, but never ever human aggression.
Mm.
Okay, so that is why it is so important that if you decide to get a pit bull as part of your family,
mm-hmm.
you need to know there is a big responsibility on your shoulder, because you are accountable for that dog, and it's strong and powerful. It's part of the power breed families. You need to be able to control your dog in such a way that it is a happy, healthy, stable canine companion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you take all of that into account, you can have a wonderful pet.
Mm.
And that is what I did. I did a lot of research. I got involved with the Pitbull Federation. I showed my dog for a very long time. I took part in demonstrations to show the public how nice these dogs actually can be.
Mm-hmm.
They are, like I said, they are a working breed. So you need to keep them busy. It's like, it's almost as bad as a Malinois. The Malinois dogs, they need to be working for 8 hours a day. The pit bulls, you can get away with 2 to 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they need to work. You need to stimulate them. They need to exercise. They need to be, you need to teach them how to react in certain situations and scenarios. You need to, it's socialization for the dog.
Mm-hmm.
You actually need to do that with every dog.
Mm-hmm.
But the bigger your breed are, the more important it becomes to socialize your dog. Because if you socialize your dog, it's not just meeting other dogs. Mm-hmm. People make the mistake. Socialization is not meeting other dogs. It's exposing your dog to different scenarios so that it can learn how to act in those situations, what is good behavior, what is acceptable, and what is not. That is a balanced dog. Mm-hmm. And if you do that with your power breed, you have an excellent companion. Mm-hmm. You need to give their brain some exercise. They need to be stimulated, exercised, socialized. And they need to be happy at home. Healthy food, good shelter. Mm. People always ask, why do dog bites? Mm. A happy dog won't bite. And dogs don't just jump the fence to bite something outside. There's always something that leads up to that point. Mm-hmm. And that is what the people need to understand.
Mm. Thanks for sharing some of that. I just wanna take you back a little bit. You mentioned something about the history of this breed, pit bulls, American pit bulls, and the 100 years that you've mentioned. I just want to find out from you. You know, I had an American bully.
Yes.
And, you know, my wife was convinced it's a pit bull, even though...
was yours?
An American bully.
American bully.
Yes. But you've seen it, remember?
I remember your dog.
It was considered a pit bull by the general population.
Because it looked like
it looks like an American bully, but
it's
anyway,
got
that's what I want.
Similar traits, but it's not. It's a different breed.
And I remember when I came. So my question, just to cut it, my question is, I want to know. I mean, we always obviously use this American umbrella term, to say it's pit bull or American bully. Because I mean, even though I was taught about the breed of my dog. I mean, I did know that there's sort of pit bull traits it's in within the same sort of lineage, if I may put it that way, in my head.
Yes.
That's my research because of traits. Like I said, you know, the muscular physique, maybe not, you know, pit bull not as strong or not as sort of big. So can you just go through the different types? You know, you mentioned an American. Are they African pit bulls, Malawian pit bull, or what's going on?
So the term American pit bull terrier is actually slightly misleading because it does not originate from America. Mm-hmm. The first pit bull or bulldogs that was where the breed originates from actually comes from England and Ireland. And from there on, the dogs were imported into America. The breed was a little bit more defined there, and then it went back to England, Ireland, and then eventually in the late 70s, early 1980s, it came into South Africa. So the American Pit Bull Terrier, or APBT as it's also called, is the breed name. It's got a breed standard. What they did in the early 80s and early 90s, they took various breeds. Terriers, bulldogs, mastiffs, and they produced a dog over decades to get to a certain point where they said, this is what we are going to call an American Pit Bull Terrier. So the bully breed is not as old as the American Pit Bull Terrier. They are about 35, if I'm not mistaken, years old. So what the people did was they took certain breeds, once again, and they put them together to get a American bully, which is, there is different sizes in the American bully. They are much more muscular than the American Pit Bull Terrier, and their trait, their characteristics, and their,
Is it like mannerisms? Is it even such a thing?
No, I don't know. but they are a little bit more placid than the American Pit Bull Terrier. So yes, that is characteristics that they bred into that specific breed to get the American Bully. Mm-hmm. So it's a different breed to the American Pit Bull Terrier. A pit bull is not an umbrella term. Mm. A pit bull is the short word for the American Pit Bull Terrier. You get the American bully, they call them bullies. Mm-hmm. Or the American Staffordshire Terriers, they call them Amstaffs. The What else is there? You get the Staffordshire Terriers. They call them Staffies. Mm. You know, so those are short terms. Mm. The pit bull is the short term for American pit bull terrier. Okay. It's not a blanket. Mm.
So breeding is an important part because you have like, in part of the breeding process, you selectively find those that are aggressive to humans and you take them out of that breeding, right?
That is correct.
And that's why it's an important part. Is it also is training also an important part? Can you also make a pit bull, train it to be aggressive to humans? Or is it like something that you make...
You can train any dog to be aggressive. Okay. And that is where the problem comes in. Okay, so like I said, we have a certain breed standard for the American Pit Bull Terrier. And in our breed standard, the pit bull is not supposed to be human aggressive. In earlier breeding practices, if a dog was found to be human aggressive, it was culled or it was not bred with any further. Because the American Pit Bull Terrier was bred to be animal aggressive and it was bred for dog-on-dog combat. Not human aggression. Mm. Okay, so that is a fault in the American Pit Bull Terrier. Mm. So you can teach any dog to be aggressive. Mm. That is not an inherited trait.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you can teach a pit bull to be aggressive.
So it's that nature and nurture thing. So in nature, they're not aggressive, exactly. But you could nurture it to become aggressive.
You can, and that is where the problem comes in with the South African scenario, because We have a very good idea what the socio-economical problems is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so people get them as protection and guard dogs, which is the biggest fault, the biggest mistake they can make, is to get their dog for protection. Because you teach him now to be human aggressive, but you cannot control that.
Mm.
And you have a dog that you cannot predict the behavior of. Because you've changed it. You taught it to be different to what it inherently was supposed to be.
Yeah. So, say a dog bites somebody, right?
Yes.
In nature, it shouldn't be like that. So, who will you hold responsible if that happens? Like, yeah.
When a dog attack happens, it's a complex situation. So, it's never just one problem. There's always more than one thing that leads up to a dog attack, okay? And we need to take all those aspects into consideration. There is the environment. First of all, the breeding. The breeding of the dog is very important. Because if you breed incorrectly, if you take that dog that was human aggressive and you continue breeding with it, you will end up with man biter.
Mm.
And that is a fault. But as humans, unfortunately, we think we're clever.
Mm.
So, yes, that is a problem. The breeding part. Unethical breeders are a very big problem. And we do sit with man biters out there.
Mm.
We need to accept it. We can't deny it. So that is a problem. Ethical breeding must be enforced through stricter regulations.
Mm.
Okay. Then you have environmental factors. Was the dog abused? Was it neglected? Was it taught to be human aggressive? So there's the environmental, there's the inherited generic, the genetics of the animal, and then all the other factors that comes in. Was it provoked? Was it anxious? Was it left in a cage? Was it afraid? Was it taught? Was it taunted?
Mm-hmm.
All those aspects leads up to a certain point.
Mm.
And then the only way a dog has to express himself, and the only way he can act out, if he's got all this anxiousness and all this aggression or fear inside of him, he will bite.
Mm. Mm. And I mean, now that you're obviously touching on that, I remember a conversation I had with my significant other at some stage about, I mean, obviously, it was just something, it just seemed logical to me to say, you know, even though you hate, I feel like dogs can read. They can read humans. Like, I mean, yes, we not talk, but they're such good.
They've got a very sick sense.
Yes. And I used to tell her, like, I mean, I know you don't love the fact that, you know, especially as Africans, we don't usually have dogs in the house. It's like, I mean, I grew up in a place where it's you'll never find a dog in a person's house. So, you know, even though we obviously, you know, are a new generation and we stay in homes where we can actually have a dog run around, she was still struggling with that. So she would, you know, kick the dog out, you know, and the dog now wants to come inside. Oh, it sees me through the glass door, and it wants to run inside. Yeah. And she's, you know, banging and, you know, just like those smaller, because I would notice how the dog is also becoming a bit more like aggressive now. I don't know if it's also just a power struggle thing. Like it can see that I obviously want it in. And someone else wants it out. So if I fight more, obviously he's going to get touched.
There needs to be a certain position or rank in the family.
Yeah. So to get to my question, or just to highlight something that you're saying about, you know, the importance of also minding the dog's environment and, you know, who stays there, who are the people around there, you know, has the dog been taught aggression? Because even though we don't consider that as teaching the dog aggression, but, I mean, if this is a dog who's always anxious, when you're not there, they've been kicked out. When you're there, they're sitting. You understand? There's this change.
It can certainly play a role, yes. I'm not a behaviorist, mm-hmm. but I can merely mention to you that dogs react on consistency. And, yes, they go through certain stages of maturity as just like us people, you know, you get your baby and then it moves into toddler phase and then your adolescence where they are they push boundaries. They see how far, what are they allowed to do and what are they not allowed to do. So you need to show the dog, this is your boundary, this is good behavior, this is bad behavior. This is acceptable and this is not acceptable. If you don't teach the dog that, if you don't show him that, if you don't take the leadership in that relationship with your dog, he will make his own decision. And he will start pushing that person, you know, okay, I am actually in front of you in this regard. So I will push the rank in the family. And that's merely from experience. So once again, I'm not a behaviorist, but that is normally how it works. And then if you don't correct the behavior timeously, you can end up with behavior that is unwanted. So if you sit in a situation where you think, I'm not quite sure whether this dog should be doing this, it's always better to reach out to professionals and ask somebody to help. There's a lot of dog and canine behaviorists out there, trainers. If people have power breed dogs or pit bulls, they can reach out to the Federation and we can guide them in the right direction. Okay? It is important. You need to show. Training is very important. Obedience. A dog needs to understand what is right, what is acceptable, and what is not. That will give you a proper, stable, easily interact. A dog that easily interacts in your family setup. He stays your companion. He is the canine in the family, but he has his own. He needs to understand where he fits in. And that, if he understands that he's there for companionship and to be part of the family, if you do get in a situation that he needs to protect you, you don't need to teach him that. He will do it out of instinct. Because that is what they do.
Have you heard stories of bulldogs protecting their owners?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I speak from experience. My first pit bull, the one that ended up on my doorstep when he was 6 weeks old. Eventually, we went for training, we did obedience classes, but I never took him for protection work or man work. Although, you know, everybody says, why don't you do that? You know, your dog is there for protection. But pit bulls are powerful, strong dogs, and they're very intelligent and loyal. So if you keep them in this family environment and they are happy, they will do the protection out of their own, out of instinct. So we had a situation in middle 2000s where we had a armed robbery at the house and the people came in. It was in the middle of the night, 2:30 in the morning. My dog went out. He surprised them. They hit him over the head. They thought it was out of the picture. They came into the house, and then my dog followed them. And they eventually shot my dog. He survived. He's a pit bull. He's very strong. He survived, and after that, the attackers fled the scene. They never pursued the rest of the
robbery.
Yeah. Sure. So yes, they will protect you.
Mm.
Mm. You don't have to teach them that.
Yeah.
Sure. Just going back on, I think you highlighted very important things, especially regarding, you know, the owners and the onus on the owners to, you know, get the dog trained. And I mean, as we know, especially in South Africa with our economy, and even just me, I mean, I've had a bully before. It's quite expensive to, you know, to take a dog and make the dog undergo all these training and behavioral sort of programs.
That is true.
Mm. So as the Pit Bull Society, don't you guys think it should firstly be illegal for people to have pit bulls without undergoing some kind of training or being screened at least?
Okay. Yeah. So the Pit Bull Federation of South Africa has been advocating for a very long time, for the past 25 up to close to 30 years, for responsible ownership, first of all, and stronger regulations. And for the last 3 years, ever since this big explosion and the big call for the ban on the pit bull breed, we've been advocating for stronger regulations on the ownership of not just pit bulls, but power breed dogs. Because, yes, I agree with you. There's a certain amount of training and knowledge that you need to have in order to own this dog and to handle it in the proper way.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yes, we are working with certain organizations to try and get proper education out there to the public. There is a lot of programs available all over the country. There's a lot of rescue organizations, animal welfare organizations that also work on training programs. So the public can just reach out to us and we can also just point them in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
But it is important for training. And eventually, if we get what we are pushing for, mm-hmm. licensing mm-hmm. of power breed owners mm-hmm. will be mandatory. And that is what we're working towards. Not mm-hmm. banning the breed,
mm-hmm.
but making sure that if you want to own a pit bull,
mm-hmm.
that you are licensed to have one. It's like owning a firearm.
Yes,
mm-hmm. exactly. Because mm-hmm. if you put an untrained pit bull in a house that people don't know what they have
mm-hmm.
and how to handle it, you're handing them a loaded gun
mm-hmm.
that can go off at any point.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the problem. You asked a question earlier on, and I didn't actually answer you. Who is to blame in a pit bull or in an attack?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not the animal. It's not the dog. He's just reacting to what he feels if he feels threatened. It is the irresponsible owner on the other side of the lead that is actually to blame.
Mm.
Not the breed of dog, but the owner, okay. the irresponsible handler.
Mm.
That is where the biggest problem is, and that's where we need to focus. That's the only way we're going to stop this carnage that is happening at the moment
mm.
of animal-human conflict.
Mm.
The Pit Bull Federation of South Africa is also working with government at the moment, and we have a DNA research project going for to find out if there's any correlation between aggression and genetics, and to have a scientific answer to that.
Mm.
Okay? Because a lot of times is a dog attacks because he's got short coat and it's a little muscular or a little bit muscular, everybody says it's a pit bull.
Mm-hmm.
Mislabeling of dogs attacking as being pit bulls are a very big problem.
Mm.
It's not just pit bulls. And it's half the time, more than half the time, it's not even a pit bull.
Mm.
It's a crossbreed, which is, you sit with a scenario where when you crossbreed, you don't know what the behavior of that dog will be when on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unpredictable because you don't know what the behavior of that dog would be.
Mm.
Is there such thing as like an illegal breeder, something like that?
It's unethical. And it's backyard breeders and people that breed. Got a dog, you've got a nice dog, let's put them together.
Mm.
And then they give the dogs away. That's illegal. Mm. At the moment, there's no law against breeding.
Mm-hmm.
But there should be a better regulation on breeding dogs. Any dog.
Mm.
The welfare situation in South Africa is, it's actually in the biggest turmoil. They're bursting at its seams. They cannot handle the amount of unwanted dogs that we have. So breeding is a big problem. Unregulated breeding is even worse.
Yeah. And I mean, if you just think about how much some of these dogs are being sold online. I mean, I remember when I was looking for a dog and the search.
It's easy to get one.
But they're lucrative. So, you know, that's even more of a reason why people would want to.
That is unfortunately another reason why people go into breeding for the money. Because, I mean, and that is where the an ethical breeder will only do a breeding of two dogs when the temperament is sound, the health of the dogs are good, if there's actually a demand. You know, there's certain things that they look at. Ethical breeder, whereas backyard breeders, they don't do it for money. They only do it for money. With they've got no regard for the health of the dog, or what happens to the puppies afterwards.
So, look, the one thing I did want to ask you before we wrap up is, on our previous episode, we had a guest, and this lady was a victim to a pit bull attack, and. It wasn't too clear to me exactly what happened with regards to was it an irresponsible owner. She did mention that this pit bull was known to be quite vicious. I think perhaps had incidents in the past and nothing was done about it. And then she became victim to quite a vicious pit bull attack where her right arm was completely mangled by this pit bull. And her domestic worker as well was also injured by this pit bull. Subsequently, security came, they put the dog down and rushed off to hospital. When we spoke to her, she wasn't advocating for the entire culling of, you know, pit bulls as a whole. She mentioned poor breeding practices. She mentioned, you know, a lack of legislature. What would you say to victims of actual pit bull attacks, and what is the Pit Bull Federation of South Africa doing to limit these?
Well, first of all, the Federation, it saddens us every single time we hear of a vicious attack or just an attack. It's not supposed to happen. And I mean, the trauma that those victims go through is enormous, and it is life-changing, you're quite right. And it's not supposed to happen. The dogs are not inherently human aggressive. They are not. They are animal aggressive. Okay, so she should have never been ended up in that situation. And I don't wish that on anybody. The Pit Bull Federation is advocating for stricter regulations. Definitely better regulation on responsible ownership, because that is the biggest problem on attacks, is irresponsible ownership and poor handling. And breeding, yes, but handling and ownership is the biggest problem. Because why was that dog outside? That dog didn't grow up outside. It came out of somebody's yard. You as owner are responsible to keep your animal inside your property. As owner of a dog, any dog, you're responsible for any and every action your dog encounters or are involved in. So the owner of that dog is actually responsible for that dog attack. Why is the dog out? Why is it running loose? If there was previous incidents, why wasn't it handled by the local authorities? There is a lack of consistency in municipal bylaws, because those are the regulations that is supposed to address those dangerous and aggressive dogs. But we know that not all the municipalities and not all the bylaws address those issues. And that is something that we are working with government and various municipalities at the moment to help them to change those regulations. Because that is, and regulation changes takes time. But we are working on that. And then obviously education. That is the biggest thing. Education and stronger regulation and accountability. If you've got a regulation in place, and then there should be accountability as well. So if you do transgress, you need to be held accountable for that. And that is what we are pushing for, and that is what we are focusing on.
I think the licensing was a good middle path. Like, so some people would say complete ban of pit bulls or cull all pit bulls. That's one extreme. The other extreme would be like complete unregulation of pit bulls. But having a regulated pit bull system with licensing is the middle path, and I think is the one that should work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Regulation, definitely, and then obviously education of those people that have pit bulls. They need to know how to handle it. They need to know what is good practice and what is bad practices with power breeds, because they are different to other canine dogs.
Yeah.
A power breed is strong and powerful. You need to have responsibility. You need to know how to handle it.
Yeah. Just one last one from me, you know. Just maybe if you can just share some with our viewers, some of the tips and tricks. I mean, I've noticed personally with myself, there's certain people who understand dogs as well, especially people who take a huge interest like you do, who can notice a dog that's in either distress, a dog that, you know, is maybe anxious and is finding itself in a very funny situation where, I don't know, maybe let's say, for example, a dog comes out to your yard and I see the dog and now I'm swearing at the dog, you know, like what kind of behaviors will aggravate even the most calmest and the most sort of nurtured dog to attack. So that's part one. The second one is, let's say now the dog is attacking, what do you do? I mean, we've heard so many stories of, do you strangle? Do you shoot? Do you beat the dog up? Do you pour hot water? I've seen hot water.
Please don't pour hot water on any animal. That is just abuse. That's not the right way to act. Okay, so... first of all, I think parents need to understand that we need to teach our children from a young age how to interact with animals. Your dog is not a jumping castle. Your dog is not a jungle gym. They are animals. You need to respect their space. If they growl at you, it's not because it's funny. They are warning you. So there are body languages, certain body languages. If the tails are up, if the ears are pulled back, if he snarls at you, if he walks away, don't walk after him. He's actually taking himself out of a situation where he's not comfortable. So that is subtle signs that you can read from your dog, that he's telling you that he's uncomfortable or he doesn't feel he's anxious or he feels threatened or... you know, he's not sure about what's happening, so he will remove himself. There's a lot of websites where you can actually go and have a look what is general behavior of a dog that you should be aware of. And I think that is important for us to teach our children from a young age what to do and what not to do. You cannot tease a dog because you're teasing him and he's going to react. It's like bullying at school. We teach our children not to do that. And by teasing a dog, throwing stones and sticks at him and enticing him, it's actually against the Animal Protection Act to entice an animal. So it's law that you're not allowed to do that. Because the only recourse that animal has is to bite. Because you're not listening to what he's saying. He's growling at you, perhaps he's moving away, but you're continuing. So the only way he knows to react or defend himself is to bite. If a dog attacks, any dog, we teach children or people to stand still. Don't lift up your arms because that is a threatening gesture for a dog. Don't bend down to him. Don't speak loudly. You know, if it's a unfamiliar dog or a dog that you don't know, rather steer away from the dog. Move to the other side. Don't confront him. Because you don't know what he's going to react like. It's unfamiliar.
Look, I mean, that is, it sounds like good practical advice, right? But from someone who's watched others being attacked by dogs, it may not be your first instinct, right? Sometimes a dog, and you haven't provoked it. There are instances.
Yeah, there are
plenty instances where a wild dog has just, you know, gotten free, run loose, and now is attacked someone. It comes unexpected. The dog's latched onto you. Now, we're talking about not a dog approaching you or looking aggressive or barking.
No, he's actually already starting to bite. Yeah.
He's starting to bite. Now we have to think practically,
can,
what are we going to do in that situation?
If you can, try to cover up your front vitals. Try to give your backside to him. Try to undress, you know, if you've got a jacket on, if you've got a shirt on. Try to give that to the dog. Hot water, hitting him with sticks, throwing stuff at him, that's not going to stop a dog from attacking. That's actually going to provoke him to continue. You're making him angry. Mm. You're just going to make it worse. Mm. So yelling, it's actually you're making noise. So and remember,
look, but I mean, it is a difficult situation.
It
now
is.
You're in this position where you need help. You're not sure. You've now.
You have to call out.
Yeah.
For help. It is difficult.
Mm.
But yeah.
And I mean, last question I have for you is because I know of guard dogs that have been aggressive towards humans, bitten or attacked humans. Do you agree that they should be put down?
Look, it's a very difficult situation.
Because they say once they taste blood, then...
No, that's just a myth. Okay? That's just a myth. It's like people think if you feed your dog raw, tastes blood and then it can bite you much easier. That's not true. Okay? But what happens is once a dog has gone over that threshold of biting a human... That inhibition is broken, okay? So he's not scared to do that anymore because he's done it once, okay? A dog can be rehabilitated with professional work and through a lot of hard work and dedication. The behavior can change. But we sit in a situation where there is so many dogs with behavioral issues, and once they've bitten... Is it really the type of animal that you want to put back in a family situation?
Mm.
To put it in a situation again where it can actually bite again.
Mm.
So, we as the Federation feels that if a dog has bitten and it was a severe mauling, that the best option is to put that dog to sleep.
Mm.
You don't want to put another family in danger. Why do that?
Mm.
There's enough other dogs that is looking for good homes. It can be rehabilitated, but is it really worth going through all the trouble?
Mm.
Look, and I love my breed and I love dogs. I love animals. But putting other humans in danger again after a dog is bitten, I don't think it's worth it.
Mm.
I don't think it's good practice.
And there I think we found at least a good middle ground. I think for someone who's been a survivor of a pit bull attack and maybe quite anti-pit bull and anti-breeding, I think that was her sentiment, that she doesn't feel like they should be further bred. And I think from your side, you've said you want legislation put in place to license the breeding of pit bulls and to monitor their growth and expansion in our country and to have responsible dog owners.
Definitely.
I think we found a good middle ground.
Yeah. Yes.
And I want to thank you for coming and sharing this information with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Leander.
Thank you.
And for those of you that are interested in breeding of pit bulls or owning a pit bull, Leander, is there any way they can find you and your organization?
Yes, they can always reach out to us. We have a website, www.pbfsa.co.za, and we're also on the social media platforms on Facebook, on X, and on Instagram and TikTok. Handle is PBFSA or Pitbull South Africa.
Awesome. Well, thank you once again, Leander. We really appreciate your time. That's it from us. Another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. That's all from me, Dr. Sehel Essa, signing off.
Naseem Sharif.
Thank you.
Dr. Ntanta Vilakazi, out.
Thank you, Leander.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks.